Welcome to Milestone Moments, the show where we explore the journeys that lead to success. I'm Sheila Slick, your host and founder of 5 Milestones. In every episode, we will bring you insights from the minds of entrepreneurs, leaders, and experts who will share not just their expertise, but the milestone moments that have reshaped their journeys and led to significant achievements. So if you're looking for motivation, you're in the right place. Subscribe now and discover the milestones that mark the path to success. Welcome to another episode of Milestone Moments in Business and Leadership. I'm Sheila Slick, your host, and today I have a very special guest, Brian Swift. He is known as the Quad Father. He is a testament to living his own life with no excuses. He was born walking on 2 feet, and at the age of 17, it was taken away due to a tragic accident. Through trial and error, pain and joy, he walks differently today. He walks with confidence, grit, compassion, and the understanding that life has a more powerful path for him. He is also the author of 8 books. He runs a 501c3 nonprofit, and he is host of a podcast and radio show. But most importantly, he is a coach and a facilitator of excellence, no matter what your situation or your circumstance is. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Sheila, thank you for those kind words. I'm excited and honored to be on your podcast.
Well, and I'm inspired. Like we mentioned before, we hopped on and started recording the podcast, just, you know, visiting your website, learning about your journey and seeing all of these books. You're quite inspirational. My hair's
stood up. Thank you.
So let's begin. I did read it was a football. Gosh, as a mom, this is so hard, right? At the age of 17, your life took a turn.
A little bit. So it was the day after Christmas in 1979. And I played everything. I played football and basketball, baseball, and I was meeting about a dozen friends at the park to play, you know, like a Christmas football game. I happened to just be running with the football. Somebody tackled me from behind. Here's the weird thing. I didn't land on my head. I didn't get hit hard. It was a group of people just falling to the ground. Nobody landed on me. It wasn't anything traumatic. But that would be the last time I got up. Even the doctors were like, man, you know, it's puzzling because usually some of this doesn't happen in those circumstances. Why it happened, I don't know. I never really thought. Believe it or not, I was so blessed. And my mom was very faith and is faith driven with, like, we don't know why things happen. You just got to keep moving forward. And I never worried about the why, because that doesn't solve anything. Why will never take anything making my life better. If I find out the why, which most of us don't find out the why things happen. So I learned how to move on and just let it be. This is the way it was going to be. Now, how good could I make it? So that's how it all started.
I'm just taking it in because, like I said, as a mom and my husband, you know, has been a football player. He was a football player his entire high school. My son was in the team. And, you know, with a sport like football, there's so much positive, right? You have the coach. It offers
great life lessons. Life lessons you don't learn in a classroom. Life lessons you don't learn a lot of places. You learn so much, whether it be, I don't care if it's on a basketball court, a baseball field, a football field, track and field, swimming. You learn things about yourself that you don't learn in school. And it's such, same thing, I'm a father, and I have 2 boys and a girl, and it came that time, they wanted to play football. That was a toughie. But you know what? I put my faith in the good Lord's hands and said, you know what? If somebody's going to get hurt, they're going to get hurt riding a bike, on a skateboard, doing something silly. It's kind of out of our control. I wasn't doing anything wrong, anything silly when it happened. I put my faith in the good Lord's hands, and my sons all played through grammar school and high school and never had anything serious.
Well, that's a very strong mindset, right? Because you're having to overcome that.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I don't know, maybe have that fear that.
Absolutely.
So you're a very strong man. And at the age of 17, how do you cope with that? How do you move forward when something like that happens? And I haven't gotten into your present age, right? I'm still just thinking of a 17-year-old.
Yeah. I had great friends and family, and I have very old school parents, and my dad was tough love. And it was like, you're not going to leave the so I got my neck fused and spent a week in the hospital going through an operation and had the halo put on. And then I went to what is now the Shirley Ryan Ability Lab, which is back then was called RIC, Rehabilitation Institute of Chicago, which is one of the top spinal cord injury rehabilitation facilities in the country, along with a handful of other ones. And in 1979, my life, based on their statistics, read like a Stephen King novel. Like, oh, you know, it's 1979, you're a quad. Don't forget, 79, we didn't have social media. We didn't have computers. We didn't have, it was like, this is, they basically opened a book and said, yeah, okay, you're a C6. You probably won't be able to drive. You know, going to school back then, there was no online. My life was like, this is what usually happens. You know, you try to get an education, but that, you know, try to do this, but this is the chance to try to. And I had this list of like the way my life was going to be. And internally, my dad said, no, it's not going to be that way. And he lived that with like, well, we got to get you measured for an electric wheelchair. No, he's not going in an electric wheelchair. He's going to push himself. You know, I mean, I think they were realistic with, you know, I'm sure he'd love for me to have walked out. But it's like, no, I'm not bringing an electric wheelchair home, so learn to push it. And, you know, my mom was 100% like, just keep looking forward. Don't worry about the statistics. Don't worry about what people say. Your life will be as great as you could dream it to be, even from a wheelchair. And I followed that.
And it has, if we move forward, right? Look at everything
you've
accomplished. You're married. You've had children who are now adults. You are making a difference, which I want to learn more about your books. And then the pivotal moment that you chose to make a difference and to start this nonprofit. So tell us a little bit about both.
Sure. You know what? There is no one moment. It is a lot of little decisions. We've all been granted the ability to make choices, and it's probably one of the biggest gifts we've been given is the ability to choose. And I was just blessed with the guidance of my parents and my friends to choose to not to be a victim, to choose not to worry about statistics, to choose not to be what my life said it was supposed to be in a historical statistical book. And I mean, just to give you an idea, after 4 months, I got out of the rehab on a Friday. I went back to school on Monday, being picked up by a bus back to high school so I could finish my high school year and graduate. There was no waiting around. There was no time to feel bad. There was no time for, woe is me. My parents just wouldn't allow that. There was no sitting in my bedroom. There was no sitting around. If you were sitting around as a kid, you were put to work. So you stayed busy. So even in the wheelchair, it was like, you know, I just didn't stay in my bedroom. I didn't pout. My friends, you know, a lot of people lose their support because they don't, they become victims. And it is a horrible thing that happens. But I didn't drive people away. I brought people in. I shared my life. I shared the fact that I wore a leg bag, that there were things that, you know, yes, I'm in a wheelchair. My friends folded it up, threw it in the trunk, picked me up, threw me in the car. We did things. So it was just allowing yourself to be vulnerable and realizing there is no one moment that all the great and beautiful things that have happened to me is not based on one decision. It's a lot of little decisions.
And they stack up.
Yes.
So what about the first book?
So, you know, I spent 20 plus years working in, so I went to junior college, graduated in 2 years, went to St. Xavier University while living at home, which I chose to do instead of going away because I could continue therapy, continue to do things that would make my life better, have the support at home. Maybe I was less independent, but I saw the picture down the line and I knew I could accomplish more by staying at home and not trying to run away from it and be all independent. So yes, I had some support at home, but then I graduated from St. Xavier's 2 years later. And I had this little old nun that was the head of the criminal justice department. It's like, what are you going to do when you graduate? And I was like, you know, Sister Dennis, that's a good question. She's like, you're going to law school. And I'm like, no, I'm not that smart. I mean, I'm first generation college. I was probably going to go to the trades and make a great living in the trades. Well, that wasn't going to happen. It's like, no, you're going to law school. Well, you know, you don't tell a nun no. I went to parochial schools. There's no debating or talking to nuns. And in high school, I had Christian Brothers of Ireland that ruled the high school I went to. So she's like, meet me after school. Yes, Sister Dennis. So we're going to talk. Well, the talk wasn't a talk. The talk was her telling me that, no, I'm going to sign you up for the LSAT. You'll get a study guide and you're going to law school. You know, I come home and I'm like, this nun thinks I'm going to go to law school. I mean, when I told my friends, they laughed. My parents were like, kind of like, eh, whatever. Well, you know what? I ended up in law school and 3.5 years later, I graduated from law school. And I worked in the law field for a little bit, a year or so, and something drove, it just wasn't for me. So I went into corporate sales and training and I spent 20 plus years having an awesome career. Up at 5, out of the house at 6, to work by 7, worked till probably 5, came home, and I started my life, you know? In between all that, I was playing wheelchair sports because I missed that competing. So I played quad rugby, I swam, I did track and field. You know, I moved forward with life. I still dated. And after about 20 years, I felt there was something more for me out there. I had been very successful in corporate. I worked on 210 North Michigan on the 27th floor. I had a corner office. But it just wasn't fulfilling. And I left corporate with 5 things I wanted to accomplish. First one was spend more time with my family. Second one was get more health. My health was diminishing, battling the long hours, the driving. So it was spend more time with my family, get my health back. I wanted to become a professional or more of a certified coach and speaker, always because I was always speaking in groups, speaking at conferences. So that was the third thing. I wanted to write a book, one book, and I wanted to start a nonprofit. And within 2 years, I had gotten my health back, spent tons of time over the next 10 years with my parents and my family, became certified John Maxwell coach and speaker, wrote my first book called Up, Getting Up is the Key to Life, and we started a nonprofit, a 501c3 nonprofit called Swift Outdoor Accessible Recreation. So, first book, kind of, it is a bit of an autobiography of my story, and there's a lot in there that would take us too long to go through, like, you know, working with corporate and the way they viewed people with disabilities, going through infertility, a lot of trials and tribulations out there, you know. So my book was kind of I'm sharing this not to shine the light on me, but to open your eyes and shine light on you that my life was supposed to be this, but I chose for it to be something different. I got married. I mean, I've been married 35 years. How many people are married 35 years without or with a disability? We've adopted 3 kids. And I don't say that because I don't say I've got 3 adopted kids. I've got 3 kids that we adopted as babies that I could not be any more proud of and blessed to have. And we've been through a lot of trials and tribulations, but through our faith and communication and understanding, we've made it work. And I've been blessed to do the things I do.
And inspiring many and helping many, including you do coaching and you do leadership coaching. Tell us a little bit about what the nonprofit does.
So it's called SOAR. That's the acronym, Swift Outdoor Accessible Recreation. Part of what helped me deal with my injury and life was getting back out doing the things I loved, which was fishing, hunting, going on long rides, which now I couldn't get on a bike. I couldn't, but I could push the wheelchair. And I got to a point where I could do 5K marathons. I could do 5K, 10K marathons. Getting out with the kids, and I got into coaching then, coaching football, coaching basketball. I loved athletics still. So that, I so believe, healing happens outside. You've got to get back out doing the things you love, being near Mother Nature. You know, there's a process called grounding, or some people look at it as earthing. I swear by it. I am the happiest. Before I started this, I was outside. I was outside with a book, reading in the sun. It's only like 55 degrees, but for me, I was one sweatshirt, but the sun's out. And you know what? I come in charged up. And insurance doesn't pay for a lot of things that people need to go back and do the things they love. And that's where SOAR comes in. So we provide things like therapeutic trikes for people who might have MS or CP or some other type of illness. We provide accessible ways to fish, accessible ways to hunt with equipment. None of this equipment is paid for by insurance. We'll buy hand controls so somebody could drive a car or a van. And help them get their car or van set up so they can get mobile again. It's not the equipment we provide. We provide hope. We provide freedom. We provide independence. We provide opportunity. That's what really matters. And when I buy some 9-year-old and we get them a therapeutic trike, and they could go out riding for the first time with their two brothers and sisters, and you're sitting there and the parents have tears in their eyes knowing that this is the first time. I didn't affect that little girl. I affected a family. I affected the neighborhood, their friends. That's the difference. And you know what? I get that. That's selfish. I get that feel good. And that is like a shot of sunshine. And I'm blessed to be able to do that.
So you provide that freedom. You provide movement. Right? Because if someone is needing the equipment, you're giving them a lot more than the equipment. It's what comes with it. So, you know, when you're going to ride, you're going to take away the little wheels in your bicycle the first time, you're fearful. When you get behind the wheel of a car, you're fearful. How do you help people overcome fear, or how do you overcome fear?
First of all, I do a lot of mentoring with these people, and not just the people who are disabled. I do a lot of mentoring with mom and dad or husband or wife, able-bodied people. I do as much mentoring for as disabled people. First of all, 93% of what we fear never happens. Just think of that. 93% of what we fear never happens. And only 3% of what we fear is as bad as what we fear, and is it turns out as bad as what we think. So the bottom line is 97% of anything we worry about either doesn't happen or happens at such a minimal, it's so minimal, it's not what we feared. And I help people start to create perspective on what they're fearing. So what's the worst thing that happens? You fall off the bike. I mean, you fall off. If you were able-bodied, you would be falling off your bike. I guarantee it. Anybody who's ridden a bike has fallen off a bike. And I try to help create perspective. And then I get them thinking about what's in front of you, not what's behind you. You know, not about you. You are. So there, you know, part of getting over your disability is just letting it be and not perseverating on it and just letting it be so you can concentrate on moving forward. So understanding statistics of fear, it doesn't probably help people a lot. Some people maybe that are very analytical, it helps. But getting them to focus on, what do you want to do next? What do you want to do? You want to be able to get in the hot tub? You want to be able to scuba dive? You want to go back to work? You want to take class? What do you want to do? Get them to think forward. That's why the windshield is gigantic and the car in the rearview mirror is this big. What's behind us is so minimally important. It's what's in front of us that's possible. And I believe COVID had an effect on this. COVID stopped people from dreaming and believing in themselves and took away a lot of people's confidence. And I try to get people to dream again and think about what's in front of them, because there's nothing you can't achieve. I mean, I may never walk again. I don't know. Maybe one day I will. I don't worry about that, because I got like 10 things I got to focus on. You know, my next book, something with the kids, you know, celebrating something with the family. My plan is, you know, what are your hobbies? What do you like to do? You know, I do a lot of woodworking. What's your hobbies? What did you do before? Let's figure out how to do it again.
So my other question, when we were talking about the fear, and I thought, oh, he may even answer that. We also use the words, I can't, or we don't believe that we are able to do that to move forward, right? Because one thing is to say, look forward or move forward. Exactly. But then we've got those limiting beliefs sometimes. How would you help someone overcome that limiting belief?
So I talk quite a bit when I'm speaking, whether that be a keynote speech or somebody's asked me to talk to their sales team about self-limiting beliefs. Do you realize how many people never get started living their life because of fear? And it's all because... And now you could be a victim and say, you know what, I had a horrible childhood. Yeah, maybe you did, but that was your childhood. And yes, you know, your parents, you know, weren't able to give you the car you wanted, the big computer, a nice phone, whatever it is. So I start to plant stories and explain this. First of all, why do people who have been given everything, love, support, independence, financial wealth, they've got technology. Why do so many people who have been given it all fail? They begin every resource. They've got it all. They've got all the resources to succeed. Why don't they? Why is it the guy who doesn't have the love, doesn't have the support, doesn't have the money, doesn't have the technology, why do so many of those people succeed? They don't have the resources. And I'm going to tell you, the best resource you could teach somebody to have is not to worry about the resources, but focus on being resourceful. If you are resourceful, you will succeed despite all of that. Now, back, how does that kind of fit in? So I'll tell you and try this. Every time you have a self-limiting, get out a pad of paper, and every time you have a self-limiting belief, write it down. Do that for a week and just look at the bombardment of negativity we have. So back to statistics. How many thoughts do you think an average person has a day?
5,000? I'm throwing a number out there.
I think it's more around 60,000 thoughts, believe it or not. A lot subconscious, a lot conscious. Do you know 85% of those to 90% of those thoughts are negative? If we are telling ourselves 45,000 times subconsciously or consciously negative thoughts, no wonder any of us have the ability to even smile. Out of that 60,000%, 85% of the repetitive thoughts are negative. That's horrible. Here's the good news. Our minds are malleable. Our minds, so I've studied neuro-linguistics programming. our minds are malleable. We could reshape the way we think. We could reshape what our life's, what you want it to be. And it starts with identifying the negative thoughts and writing them down. Do it for a week. And then go. You have to go back and and this is part of what I do with coaching. You have to go back and revisit them. And then start changing words you use. So I had one person that was like, everything sucked. You know, this sucks, that sucks, this sucks, my life sucks, work sucks. You know, I mean, everything was, it sucks. I said, you know, that's such a negative thought. Well, no, it's really not. I'm just kind of explaining the way it is. No, it's a negative thought. Replace that sucks with that's interesting. Because when you say something sucks, you've put an exclamation point and totally decided that it sucks and it will always suck. And that means your life sucks. When you say that's interesting instead of that sucks, you leave some room for interpretation and possibilities that it doesn't suck. It's a moment in time and that maybe it's not as bad as saying that sucks. And you're not putting an exclamation. You're leaving more of a question mark on it, which is less negative than that sucks. So I start to help people replace words. Instead of using this, start to say this. And it's just a process over time. I didn't get this way in 2 years, 3 years, 7 years. I've worked at it hard. You know, so that's the path that I start with, helping people get rid of that limiting beliefs, that self-doubt, that lack of confidence. And we just build. It's one step at a time, but I help them reprogram their mind and help them move forward in a way better. Life is too short to get up and think it sucks every day. So
who do you serve? Are they children? Are they adults? What does that look like?
So from the source standpoint, we will help anybody who is disabled get equipment. Children, vets, moms, dads, any age, anywhere in the USA. We have helped people get equipment and whatnot. In terms of who I help from a coaching standpoint, it's usually not children because they don't understand the concepts. It could be the parents or the kids. It could be, and a lot of times it is the parents of kids who are going through it, to help them understand the mindset and their, you know, what's possible, because they don't see it either. And I probably spend 40% of my time coaching people with no disabilities, because here's my opinion is, it's worse to be mentally disabled, to be mentally paralyzed, than physically paralyzed. And I help people able-bodied. I don't care if you're a president, vice president, all the way down to, you know, the janitor. I help them become mentally unparalyzed.
So it sounds like you serve individuals. You're not after teams and corporations. You're serving individuals in different stages of life.
Yes, but I do get asked to speak to teams. You know, I do get asked to provide different perspectives to sales teams, or one of them was they were a nurse, a company that does private nursing and home health, and they had four offices, one in Illinois, Indiana, Tennessee, and whatever. And all the executives and leaders were getting together, and they asked me to come in and talk to them because it was just going through changes and there was so much negativity and people weren't seeing the light. So I do, you know, if any of them individually wanted to talk to me, I would gladly do that. So a lot of there was a lumber company in North Dakota that, you know, their sales team was just, they weren't producing. They were struggling, and they asked me to, and it was over a Zoom I said I'd come out there. I'd rather do it, you know, I can travel, but so we did it over Zoom, and I spent, you know, two half days kind of getting them to rethink about what they're doing and their possibilities, and admit that maybe what they're doing isn't working, and they're getting in their own way more than what they're feeling, like the market sucks, people don't want to buy, there's too much competition. You know, those are all limiting beliefs. Then maybe the market sucks, but you know what? Somebody's going to go out there, they're going to make $1 million. Why not you?
Well, no, I ask because you're a lawyer, so you've got a lot of skill sets all going on. You have your sales training because you worked in corporate, and then you have the nonprofit. So I didn't know if it was geared towards a specific niche to help identify.
And people, I mean, it is great to have a niche, but I'm so all over, it's hard to, I don't want to disqualify anybody. If you think, oh, you know, just help people with disabilities. No, I probably work with people without disabilities more or as much as people with disabilities. So, because you don't have to be in a wheelchair to be disabled. I know a lot of people walking around that are mentally paralyzed that I wouldn't trade seats with. So.
And I think, I don't know numbers and I don't know statistics, but I do know there is also, you know, a rise in that mental
health.
And I think,
yes,
that, you know, technology, as much as I'm an advocate for it and I, you know, try and leverage it and teach people how to use it, I also see, you know, the negative side effects, right? And what it is doing to the younger generations, and it's bringing isolation, it's bringing more insecurities. You're having to deal with all these filters and profiles that look perfect. And I don't know what it, you know, how much harder it is to grow up now than it was in those 70s that we spoke about earlier when we didn't have these things. So I think you'd be great in so many different aspects, not just.
Thank you. And I agree with you. Any technology we have is great, but once it goes unsupervised, and I see it, I see, you know, coaching, I see parents hand their 5-year-old, they, you know, when they're being annoying, their $1,000 telephone to behave. No, how about turning around and telling your child, don't interrupt mom, have a seat and wait till I'm done. Parenting is stopped. Here's $1,000 phone, go play. Here's a $2,500 computer. Go play. Get out of my hair. I want to be your friend. You know what? I didn't care about being my kid's friend. My job as a father was not to be their friend. My job as a father was to raise them, provide them with wisdom and love, and expose them and prepare them for a horribly tough world. I cannot be your friend and do that at the young age. We will be great friends as you get older, but I don't care if you like me or love me now. It'll all come together. And guess what? I got 3 kids that think I walk on water. And I'm the tough dad. And I'm the, yeah, but you know what? I got 3 kids that they think I walk on water, and I'm so blessed. And it's all come together for them. Oh, and I'll give you an example. When it came college time, my kids all wanted to go away to school. I have 99% of the kids are going to school away. And I said, here, do you want to be in this much debt or no debt when you're done? You want $100,000 worth of debt, $50,000 or no debt in 4 years? Which would be the best scenario? Well, I don't want debt. Okay, well, you know, mom and I have saved this much amount of money for you, which nowadays didn't pay for as much as it did as we were saving. So we're here, we're going to help you, because you want to go to school, and we get that. But here's the stipulation. You're all going to junior college. I'm the bad guy. Yes, I'm whatever. You call me whatever you want. I really don't care. You're going to go to junior college for 2 years, and you're going to get out of junior college debt-free. In 2 years, if you still want to pursue a college education, we will support wherever you want to go. If you want to go into the trades after that, go into the trades. If you want to join the army, join the army. If you want to start your own business, I will help you, guide you, support you. But 2 years of junior college, I had 3 kids that got out of 4-year universities debt-free. Is they got out and started to listen to their friends complain about the debt they're in and the situations they're in. Oh, dad wasn't such a dummy. He didn't do this for him. Like, oh, sudden dad, he kind of forced us to make a pretty good move here. Let's see, I don't have a $500 payment. I don't have a school payment. I don't have a $600 car payment because he wasn't going to let me buy the car I wanted. He let me get a car that worked Yeah, I was the bad guy. You know, your friends have been given and ride nice cars. You're driving a nice car. Why? Because it gets you from A to B. And when you can afford a nice car, giddy up, you can go buy a nicer car. But all of a sudden, it all came together, and all of a sudden, mom and dad became smart. So,
love it. Now, you also have a book about, I think it has the word dad in the title.
It does. I did I co-authored a book with 20 gentlemen. And if this is the one you're talking about, because I know it's not on my website, called Godly Men. Godly Fathers Make Godly Men. Father, are you talking about the Quad Father?
Yeah, you have a bunch of books. That's why I'm trying to remember the names, but you have
So I wrote a book called The Quad Father. So after a bunch of years, and you know, you get into this entrepreneur world and it's like you gotta brand yourself. What do you mean you gotta brand yourself? Well, you gotta be known for something. Well, okay, I had crossed spending 40 years pushing myself in a manual wheelchair, which is unheard of out there. And I was out on a ride, and I don't know if I was having a conversation with somebody or somebody passed me, and it came to me, you got to brand yourself as the Quad Father. It's kind of catchy. It's different. And it really talks to what you've done. So I wrote a book called The Quad Father because it is 100% raw, honest, tough love book. And what I do is I address every excuse that I've heard from people with disabilities, people without disabilities, and basically called a, you know, it's BS. You know, you can do this. This is not a reason to stop this. So I basically answer every negative excuse on why people cannot thrive and put it into a book called The Quad Father.
Love it. I thought maybe it was fatherhood. So we're going to skip and fast forward because you have many, many, many books. I mean, we could spend hours talking, but your latest book, what is that called? And what is it about?
So the one that my latest book, I started a trio called Swift Fixes. And they're more of a booklet, but they talk, like, one is about how to overcome pain. Because if you rely on the pharmacy world and pain medication, I've seen too many people zombied out with other major side effects. I believe there's holistic ways to deal with pain. The other one is about setting goals and moving forward in life. Like, how do you move forward? So I wrote three books on that kind of, in that kind of direction, were my last three. And then the one that came out that, and I don't talk about it, I should, is a compilation of about 20 people on their entrepreneurial journey and the lessons and wisdom. And that was actually was an international bestseller from, you know, that sold United States, Canada, and Mexico. So that's it. And yes, I am working on another book, and it's really probably going to address more that mental health and being mentally paralyzed.
So is that your next milestone?
Yes and no. So one would be the book. The next milestone would be to raise, I'd love to raise $500,000 for SOAR and be able to help more people. I want to impact 1 million people in 26, you know, which is 2 months plus away. I want to impact more people in a bigger way. And the only way I can do that is with this help and support of the public and companies, corporations, foundations to support SOAR so that we could support others. And my goal is we've never made near that amount. And, you know, some people think it's a big jump to try to make it 1 year. I'm like, well, you know, if your goals do not scare you, then they're not lofty enough. Your goals should be slightly frightening. That's frightening to think, because I don't like failing, but I don't fail often. because of a course I teach called Sometimes You Win, Sometimes You Learn. Because you don't fail if you learn. As long as you're learning, it's not a failure, it's a lesson. And some people look at failures and it so deprives them of that motivation and inspiration and confidence and self-belief. But failing is just a stepping stone if you use it the right way. It's not a stumbling block. So I, you know, so many people have all these stumbling blocks in front of them. I take them away. It's not a stumbling block. It's a stepping stone. You're wiser now. You've learned lessons. It's not a failure. Sometimes you win, sometimes you learn. It's not sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. That's the saying that's been out there. I don't believe in that. I believe sometimes you win, sometimes you learn. If you're learning, you're not losing.
Oh, love it. Mine is, you can't fail if you don't try.
Absolutely. It's true.
Oh, my children have, you know, reminded me of that. And then it ended up leading to things I didn't imagine could happen in a good way. So I love your mindset. I love your positivity. How can we help you reach your goal for 2026?
Not everybody could give financially. Trust me, I get that. Some of our biggest donations might have been $50 from somebody who couldn't spare $50 and whatnot. But being able to share our information, share our links, not just on social media, but you sit back and think about all the people that you know that aren't on social media, send them an email, give them a call and say, hey, you know what? I'm kind of collaborating with this organization. I've met this man that runs a 501c3. You as a company, and now is a perfect time because corporations, companies, foundations, most of the giving they do is in December, because they forget that they have this money they need to spend for tax purposes, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, that's right. Or they had a way better year than they thought they were going to have, and it's like, well, let's. You know, a lot of businesses are very benevolent and they want to spread the love and the success. Those are people you probably won't find a ton on Facebook, but you'll find them on LinkedIn, or you know them. You know somebody who's a VP, a president. Our biggest donor overheard a conversation of a friend of ours at a Thanksgiving party. And our friend was at the Thanksgiving party. And two people were having a conversation, and the guy brought up, well, you know, we're looking for nonprofits to give money to. She went over and introduced herself, told them about SOAR, and they have been one of our biggest donors. It just came out of she heard a conversation. So it's just amazing just being aware that we exist and then taking being present and being intentional about reaching out to people is what's going to do it. What's going to create this sustainability relationship, because we could help companies. I mean, if a foundation or an organization wants to get involved and maybe they're struggling with sales, man, I'll come out or I'll do a Zoom sales training or help reset your salespeople's mindset. I mean, so I'm a believer everybody should win. We all could win. There's enough out there for us all to be successful. There is an abundance out there. You just have to look for it and understand what that's been. And that doesn't mean that we have setbacks. You know, sometimes we get driven in this, I call it a divine direction that might feel like a setback. Maybe it is, but there's a reason for it. And we don't always know that. But just keep believing and have faith that there's a reason and that you still are driving towards this divine direction. So that's how you can help.
And where do we find you? Is there a website? So what are your social media handles?
Yeah, so you could go to Swift Outdoor Accessible Recreation, and you could find SOAR. If you're looking at a little bit of my coaching, just go to brianpswift.com, B-R-I-A-N-P as in Patrick, S-W-I-F-T.com. And I will send you personally the information about the fundraiser we're having, and just some stuff about SOAR and things of that nature. You could find me on LinkedIn. I'm out there under Brian P. Swift. You can find me on Facebook, both Brian Swift and SOAR. And then on,
And the other... SOAR is S-O-A-R. Just make sure that we spell it correctly, not SOAR like my muscles are aching.
No.
SOAR.
Because, it's an acronym for SOAR. Outdoor Accessible Recreation. And then you could find me on Instagram under the_quadfather. And then I started my second podcast, which is SOAR. It's SOAR, driven by the Quad Father. Great conversations, just like we had now. A lot of inspiration, a lot of wisdom that I just like to share with people.
Oh, well, thank you so much for joining me today. I will make sure to put all of those links in the description so that we can help you reach that goal.
Thank you so much. I love what you do. I love the name of your podcast. Just keep doing it. That is your divine direction, and it's going to bring you to great places.
Well, thank you. And thank you all for tuning in to another episode of Milestone Moments in Business and Leadership. Until next time.